Andrei Shakhanov, we're both confronted with the problem of a very humanitarian issue in Libya, and we're also dealing with a somehow tactical question. What does NATO do in such a situation? There are some people that want to construct a no-fly zone. There are some people that are saying that the Europeans have more of a stake in the outcome of this than we do, even though we import oil from Libya, but we don't have nearly as much as you. So that the stake in the stability of North Africa, which is right on your doorstep, is pretty large. Can you tell me a little bit about whether you think, A, there is a European consensus on this, B, whether you think there's a NATO consensus on this, and C, what would your suggestions be on how we deal with this very critical issue?
As far as the European consensus is concerned, in our public mood, the main discussion is about refugees, how to deal with all these people coming to Lampedusa, coming to Europe, and whether we have to solve that problem in Libya or in Tunisia, in the neighborhood. But I think the fear is that these people come to Europe and stay in Europe. So I think that is not at the outreach of a strategic challenge. We have some European countries requesting for a no-fly zone, but I think the reluctance of Secretary Gates is rather realistic, that you have to attack Libya, you have to destroy the ground bases in Libya, really, to impose a no-fly zone. And this has the quality of a new war.
It's an active war.
It is an active war, and I currently don't see a consensus within NATO to go to war without Security Council resolution.
But let me interrupt you there, Andreas. You and I have been around for a long time. I remember in 1999, when we were facing a situation in Kosovo where there was also bloodshed, and we, NATO, you, Germany, and the United States, everybody, went to war without a UN mandate. What's the difference?
So the difference is that the humanitarian catastrophe has not reached the same level or the same visibility. The question is how long our public opinions will support awful pictures diffused around the world every day by all the TV programs. So I saw in my discussions today here in town big reluctance, not only in the administration, but even more on the hill. They do not want to play the bad guys again, and they all refer to their constituents who do not want to go to the next war without having withdrawn from Afghanistan and other places. So for us, there has to be a European commitment. What Germany has offered to Libya and to Egypt, to Tunisia, to the other Arab countries is a transformation partnership. And I think we should focus very much on education and training. So long-term commitment has to offer life perspectives for a very young population. And this is by skills, this is by economic development, this is the question, how ready are we in Europe to open our markets for agricultural products, how ready our companies are to invest in education and training facilities in the countries of concern. And, well, the question is how we create 2 million jobs a year in the Maghreb region only to compensate demographic growth.
Yeah, I understand that, but let's bring you back to the immediacy of March 9th when people are being killed every day, every hour.
Yeah.
How do we stop that?
I do not think that there is a consensus within Europe of a regime change from outside. And all the European governments, they insist of Libyan ownership, and we do not have to give the feeling to the opposition forces that they are driven from outside. So how do we stop killing? How do we stop violence and maintain Libyan ownership? This is, I think, the dilemma we are living.
But you're facing a problem that is coming from Benghazi. They're saying, recognize us as the rebellion forces, to the EU specifically, but also to us. Can we do that?
We do not see very exactly whether it is one unique rebellion force or whether there are different tribes and how organized they are, whether it is there is a political alternative behind, or if it is not only revolution against Gaddafi and against the lack of perspectives for individual perspectives.
So it's a mess, basically. I mean, you know, it's hard for us to know who to negotiate with.
It is a humanitarian mess, and I think in the U.S. perspective, which is widely shared in Europe, the key game is Egypt. Egypt is perhaps the test case for that transformation process in North Africa and the Arab world. And here, I'm not so very pessimistic. First of all, the Muslim Brotherhood has lost their monopoly of opposition.
Right.
They were the only organized opposition movement in Egypt. But if the military forces play the game correctly and give time to others to organize themselves, to found political parties, to organize themselves, this might be a model to combine the values of democracy and freedom with a Muslim population.
Well, Turkey's already done that to some extent, don't you think? I mean, Turkey could also be a model.
Turkey, well, I think that this transformation process in the Arab world deeply changes the role of Turkey.
Right.
A couple of weeks ago, President Erdogan wrote an article in Newsweek underlining that EU accession is no longer strategic priority of Turkey. They are looking more to the Ottoman space. He is saying in that article, the UK had an empire, we were an empire. So they see themselves as strategic dominating actor in the Middle East.
Right.
And this makes EU accession no longer prior in the perspective of the Erdogan government. I think
you think that's a problem? Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, the question is how we deal with Turkey. Do we insist on negotiating EU membership, which risks to the negotiations are currently fizzling out because neither the Belgian presidency nor the Hungarian one and probably nor the Polish one will be able to open a new chapter. But even if we continue to negotiate the last detail of the single European market, that will take at least one more decade. But I think we have to offer to Turkey strategic cooperation in the Middle East. And so we have to give them a role, and we have to anchor them in our common transatlantic and European approach.
No, you have that in NATO.
I mean,
it seems to me that one of the issues that we're going to face, if you go back and look at Libya for a minute and say, what is it that you would do? What would Germany want to do if Gaddafi somehow pushes back all of these rebels and slaughters them and remains in power? What options do we have? We can basically have more sanctions, we can surround him, and we can isolate him and so forth. That's all we can do right now, right?
Well, all we know is that Gaddafi cannot remain in power. And that is what all the European governments, with the exception of Berlusconi, have publicly declared. And we have the backing of the Obama administration. So the question is really, what can we deliver if he really regains military
control,
the upper hand over the situation in the country? I think up today, the 8th and 9th of March, I think military intervention is not yet an option. But, you know, in the Balkans after Srebrenica, there was a moral pressure not to look just at humanitarian catastrophe. But today I have no idea and we have no concrete plan how to react in such a case.
Well, I think that's the issue that I want to close with, because, you know, we are talking about a NATO meeting that's going on right now. There's a NAC meeting today, there's another NAC meeting tomorrow, and all through this week, and they're going to try to figure out what they can and cannot do. The interesting thing is that NATO just came out of a Lisbon summit with all kinds of new understandings of what it is to be, what mission it has, and how it begins to define it. It seems to me here's an immediate situation that presents itself and says, well, what can we do? I think what we're happening here is we're running up and saying, yes, we want to act, but we know our limits, and we know that there's an old expression about going in with military means that can sometimes backfire and wind up with a reaction on the part of the people you're trying to save who may not, in the longer run, appreciate what you've done. At the same time, you're caught with a dilemma, are you not, with your own memories of all of those thousands of refugees that came into Germany. You had hundreds of thousands of people coming in. You don't have them right now. And so the immediacy of that particular crisis in Kosovo in 1999 was 10 times as great immediacy for your local population than this one is.
We don't have it in Germany, but we have 200,000 of them in Tunisia. We have them in Lampedusa in Italy. So the quantity of the problem is not yet similar. But if you refer to NATO, I think this is an opportunity to discuss the interaction of European security and defense policy and NATO. That means, what are the Europeans capable and willing to do? I mean, in a common responsibility. And in NATO, we have the permanent problem of overstress, looking to not only to Afghanistan, but to the Balkans, what about Pakistan, which is perhaps the most dangerous place in the world currently. So in the immediate neighborhood of Europe, and if there is a threat, not a military threat, but a destabilization threat, which is imminent for Europe, but less for the United States, so to what degree are we already willing and are we already capable to really to take responsibility, to have a real hard security European commitment?
And that is a question that's been on the table for a very long time in Europe.
It has been on the table, but more theoretically, now it becomes really a real question.
I think that's why I started off by saying, are we hearing echoes of 1999? And there you had the Balkans, which were literally on your doorstep. This is across the Mediterranean, but still right there.
So what we are hoping is that in Libya, as in Egypt and in Tunisia, they will succeed to change the regime on their own means.
Right.
And then back them programs of rule of law, in political support, party creation, and so on.
Right.
But this is perhaps a scenario we would like to see. But if the security situation deteriorates furthermore, we will have to remain open for other options.
That's exactly where I think we all stand. But let me end with this hope that I think that, you know, we've been talking about NATO coming out of this Lisbon Treaty and having a good mission and having an understanding about where it is in the 21st century. This is an immediate test of that. This is, in a way, an opportunity. And I don't think it's too much to say that this is an opportunity for Europe and the United States, it seems to me, to find common ground in a way that's very concrete.
And it is another, it shows that even after the bipolar Cold War and after two decades of unilateral U.S. predominance of the global political framework, there are emerging countries, there are other political poles emerging in the world, but NATO, the U.S. and the Transatlantic Alliance remain the only political actor who is able to export stability, to project power, and to intervene politically.
Right.
I think that China and Brazil are challenging our economic predominance, but they do not will or they cannot provide political solutions and export stability to other places of the world. So even in the 21st century, where the global scenario changes economically, I think that as far as security and political structure building are concerned, United States with her European allies remain without alternative.
Absolutely, and I think that's the major message that has to be given, by the way, not only to each other, but also to our respective publics.
Yeah, and if that role we can play is a positive role, is expected from Muslim societies,
yeah.
And if we commit to their development, I think this is an opportunity to avoid the clash of mm-hmm. civilizations. This
yeah.
is an opportunity of new confidence building between our model of life, between our values and the Islamic world.
You know, one final note, and I think that's worth mentioning, is that in the last several months and weeks of this enormous transformation going on, you don't see a lot of American flags burned, and you don't see a lot of Israeli flags burned.
No.
This is about something that goes beyond this,
and
I think that's an opportunity.
Yeah, it is an opportunity, and Germany, this is the German administration and German parliament, we are very committed to that process, and we are ready to take some leadership in offering packages of institution building, of really change of the political system.
Yeah, well, let's hope we're both successful in that.